Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Imagine for a moment that you are handed a golden bubble, a most precious and fragile form, and it is up to you to keep it from popping. Well, our story continues, a story that is your personal gift, a story as fragile as a golden bubble. Let's find out how we keep this treasure alive, if we can, when we return with the voice of the earth and the voice of yet another wonder, the call of the ivory-billed woodpecker, which still touches deep into the woods of the Catch River National Wildlife Refuge. Listen. So what now? One ivory-billed woodpecker has been spotted. What's next? We find out as we continue with Dr. John Fitzpatrick. Well, now, of course, the tough question is, how is it that a bird that has not been spotted, a bird of this caliber and size since 1944, has been able to be in these woods somehow and reappear? What are some of the speculations?
There are a couple of things at work here. Number one, the bird has always been difficult to find for the last 150 years of its existence.
Hmm.
And number two, not very many skilled birders have been working in this huge wooded area. And number three, it is huge. It's 500,000 acres of forest that's visited by hunters and fishermen from in thinly distributed numbers over a few months each winter. But really, it's a pretty unknown place. In fact, Arkansas was kind of off the radar screen for ivory-bill hunters until relatively recently. By far, the most important thing is that this land for the last 30 years has been the attention of some very, very concerted conservation efforts by the Nature Conservancy, a private organization, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission. So increasingly it is under protection and therefore growing back, and so it begins to be better and better place for the ivory bill. And there really is the heart of the story of the future, because this woods, in the long run, we're in the process now, the early stages of regrowing back the old bottomland forests that used to be the haunts of this woodpecker.
Hmm.
Right now these forests are significantly younger than 100 years old. Post-logging. And the ivory bill lived in places that had 200, 300, 400-year-old trees in it. So in the big picture, the bird needs a large amount of very old forest, and we're in the process of growing that back. There's been a great head start out there, and hopefully the next few decades, we add to the total extent, and we begin doing the management required to commit to what I refer to as regrowing a really old forest.
At this point, what is your speculation in terms of the total numbers of animals that exist?
Well, we really don't know how many exist. We're completely confident that the number is at least one, and of course the difference between one and zero is enormous.
Yeah.
We also observe that that woodpeckers living beyond the age of 15 are extremely rare, so the odds are that this bird is somewhere between 2 and 12 years old.
Hmm.
And therefore, the bird was hatched and raised by successfully breeding parents sometime in the 1990s or even in this century.
Hmm.
That's the highest probability. And that means that the bird's been breeding somewhere long after most ornithologists had given up hope on it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know where yet, and we don't know how many that is, but the chances that we're looking at what's literally the last individual of its kind seem to us to be remotely small. What's much more likely is that there is a very thinly distributed breeding population, perhaps as little as a few breeding pairs, that exist throughout that White River, Cache River system. The best thing we can say and the best thing we can hope for is that as time goes on, that forest is getting better and better because it's getting older and older. So their breeding success, we hope, should be able to turn around and begin to go in a positive direction.
Well, now this is where science gets challenging, because I'm sure you're torn between what the proper thing to do is. And also, at this point, why don't you go ahead and talk a little bit about what the public should be aware of in terms of not trying, you know, some birders are really fanatical about getting adding a species like this to a life list, and that could be very damaging to this particular moment.
Right. We are concerned that the bird be treated with enormous respect, that the bird and its place be treated with huge respect, that the likelihood is high that many people will want to jump in there and try to see it. I haven't seen it yet personally, and I would love to see it, and everybody who's a passionate birder would love to see it. Everybody needs to also know that it is excessively difficult to see. We've documented literally thousands of person hours for the 7 really high-quality sightings that we've accumulated. And the process of having hundreds or thousands of people running through the woods trying to find it would actually be very detrimental. So we are trying to ask people to be very respectful. There are a few places set up down there by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service as access points, and we've already worked over this last year with the service to suggest methods that are as good as any for giving yourself a chance of seeing it. And those methods do not include diving down deep down inside the forest and tromping through and camping. It's a very difficult place physically to work. It's very exhausting to work in there. Mm-hmm. And it is filled with poisonous snakes, cottonmouths. It's thick with cottonmouths and mosquitoes in the summertime. So it's a rather inhospitable spot to be working.
Now, if a person were to actually see this animal, what would you recommend they do?
If somebody sees this bird, by far the most important thing to do is to get a picture of it. We have a problem that many, 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 many people are contacting us right now, describing birds in their backyards that they're seeing that they think are ivory-billed, and you know, it's almost impossible that they are. And everybody needs to recognize that. Almost everybody is reporting to us something that is a pileated woodpecker, and that's going to be true of most of the people who think they've seen it in this woods also. Recognize that professionals have been trying for a year across the entire region to be seeing it, and 7 times over a few seconds each they've seen it. So remember that you're almost certainly seeing pileated. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pileated for every one ivory bill that you might see down there. So, A, be very careful and very cautious and very conservative about your identification. Report only something that you're positive about, and if possible, get a picture.
Now, what is the most notable field mark for the ivory bill?
There's absolutely the diagnostic thing that must be seen for this to have a chance is a very, very large patch of white all across the back of the wing, and I underscore that, all across the back of the wing. Pileated woodpeckers do have a lot of white in their wings, and so when you see one flying away from you, you'll see a bird with white in its wings. That's not enough. You need to see a massive patches of snow white in the back of both wings as the bird's flying. It's a very large woodpecker. It can fly very rapidly. Several of the people who saw it report it flying a bit like a loon overhead. So it's a large woodpecker with a huge amount of white in the wings. Don't be concerned about the bill and the red crest. Look for the white in the wings. In fact, Tim Gallagher and Bobby Harrison's extremely experienced effort to look for this bird, when they saw that bird, they couldn't even remember what the head or tail looked like.
Mm.
They were so riveted on watching the wings and the pattern of white in the wings.
Mm.
So that's the thing to see.
Now you're torn in terms of what to really do. If this was the only individual left, this is where science becomes difficult. You have tough decisions to make.
Well, in the case of woodpeckers, it's not that tough. First of all, we'd never know for sure that it's the only individual. And in the case of woodpeckers, they're very difficult to keep in captivity and extremely difficult to breed in captivity. So the notion of capturing the bird and and keeping it in the cage is basically not one of the options. The true option here is to work as hard as we can to make a place where this bird can find a mate and raise babies. That's what we're after. And so it's a really a conservation effort, not a rescue effort.
Now, I've heard that Secretary of Interior Gail Norton has really stepped up to assist in this process.
She's Gail Norton's very interested in the process. She immediately, upon hearing this, said, well, we should be involved. We must do something. She committed last Thursday $10 million of this year's money towards programs of habitat restoration, landowner incentives for reforestation, and research. And the Interior Department has talked about this being a multi-year, multi-million dollar effort to really work on the big picture with the local community, making a cooperative conservation effort that involves private lands and private incentives, as well as public management and law enforcement. So she's quite interested in it. She was very, very excited and very engaged in the process leading up to the press conference.
This story will continue, and if people want to follow this into the years ahead here, what's the best way for them to do so?
They can pay attention to the, I mentioned the partnership that formed as the project began last March, and that partnership continues. It's called the Big Woods Conservation Partnership. The Nature Conservancy and the Cornell Lab of Ornithology are leaders in it, but it includes a bunch of other public and private agencies. And you can follow that partnership and look for news on it at ivorybill.org on the website.
And that's also where they can see this momentary little clip of this bird.
That's right. The that site has a clip. It has reference to the science articles that they can go directly to. It has a lot of ancillary pictures of the place. And it will be the place, along with our own website at the Cornell Lab of Ornithology.
Why don't you go ahead and give that URL?
birds.cornell.edu. Both of those sites will keep the public posted on what's developing in the story. We will be working together with the American Birding Association to put out strong recommendations for how people should treat this story from the birding perspective. And we'll continue to do research in the area. We will no doubt be engaging volunteers in the process. We encourage people to look in other parts of the southern forest that are growing back in case it's not only the big woods that have a bird or two in it. And in general, we've basically given the ivory-billed woodpecker a new lease on life in terms of human interest in it for the next 50 years. Hopefully that involves growing back the great big forests of the Deep South.
Well, Dr. John Fitzpatrick, the director of the Cornell Laboratory of Ornithology, thanks so much for telling us this amazing story here on the Wild Side News, and I hope we have a chance to talk again and get an update.
It's been my great pleasure, and I look forward to that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm, thanks a lot.
The wonders can cease, but for now, a gift to us all. Lest we ever take it for granted, we end today's show with just a reminder of the mystery that we must never cease to know, for nothing that we will ever create will compare. If you can, be sure to take a look at today's show page to see the picture. It's a picture of a plant and a bird. The South African plant, the Babiana regnus, has scarlet flowers and grows somewhat close to the ground. Its leaves are long and curved, but perhaps through some strange design flaw, the bird, the malachite sunbird, that best spreads the pollen to other plants, cannot easily reach into the flower for the nectar from the ground. Perhaps at some time a special bee or butterfly or hummingbird would do this, but now a bird is given the task, due mostly to a unique adaptation by this flower. To help the bird get far enough off the ground to get to the nectar, the plant grows a long, stout stick, a perch, just for the bird. I invite us all to wonder how. Let us all celebrate this day as a gift to the power of life. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios until we meet again each Thursday or anytime on the archives on your Voice of the Earth here on the Wild Side News.